Amy and Tack and choir for a beautiful anthem. Again, feeling very fully in the mood for communion today. Wonderful thing to keep us on theme there. So with our pumpkin patch opening up, I have fall on the mind quite a bit, and pumpkins that much more as well. And we know that in the last few years, in the U.S. in particular, that pumpkins have come to a special level of prominence when it comes to ushering in fall. We know that as soon as pumpkin spice stuff starts showing up at the stores, that it is fall. Maybe they tried to make it be fall like a few weeks ago to sell things. Corey, do you want to bring my sound up? I don't know if I can hear myself in the thing. Got it? Okay. And obviously, I think Starbucks started that trend, but we're seeing it in all sorts of places. And that's an interesting example of how people will take like a single ingredient and say, well, if I can make some money off it, I'm going to try to fit it into whatever I possibly can. Now, maybe there's some examples that we can think of where even something surprising, someone saying, you know, pumpkin makes people think of fall, I'm going to try to do something a little bit different. And it turns out you never would have thought pumpkin would taste good in that. And then it becomes this amazing thing that you love. There are probably some other things, though, that feel a little bit strange. Out of curiosity, does anyone have any favorite surprising pumpkin spice or pumpkin ingredient inclusion things, or any ones that you think are really gross and you're like, why did they ever possibly do that? Pumpkin goldfish crackers. Nice. All right. Now, did they have the cheese with that too, or was it just pure pumpkin flavor? Pure pumpkin flavor. Okay, I can see that being okay. Any other good examples? Yeah, Peggy?
Yeah, Circle
Mill Ohio
has a pumpkin sugar.
Oh, yeah.
And they have everything from pumpkin
salad,
pumpkin burgers.
Yeah, pumpkin burgers, I heard of that too. So a whole range of things, again, like what can we do to fit pumpkin in to who knows what? Some of it feels like it's really nice. Some of it a little strange. Any other ones people want to lift up? Yeah, Sandy?
That's a silly one, but my daughter's dog was sick a few weeks back growing up.
He
has a doctor's
pumpkin. Oh, okay. Interesting. All right. So pumpkin is, for all seasons, good for our dogs, apparently, to help out. Lisa, you had an example? Pumpkin roll, yes. Those are often a feature of the bazaar coming up. And so, yeah, have that come up. Glenna, did you have your hand up too or no? Okay, all right. So, yeah, we have all these interesting examples. I have seen some weird ones too and looked up some more this week to see like how sometimes we kind of force it in there and for good or ill. There are pumpkin spice Pringles, pumpkin spice hummus. There's some fancy restaurants around the country that are doing pumpkin burgers, like you mentioned. There's also pumpkin spice toothpaste and pumpkin spice deodorant if you want to, like, really go for it and you smell like fall wherever you go. And then also, maybe in honor of our car show, Krista, if you're at home and want to look for this, there's Car Detailer that is pumpkin spice now as well. So people are trying to get pumpkin into everything. Now, this is kind of a silly example. It's something that we see around us all the time. But it's not just something that we see in our lives with food ingredients or other things like that. We know that what it's like to fit things in that sometimes maybe feel like an exciting new combination and create opportunity, but sometimes feel difficult and awkward, can happen in our human interactions and relationships as well. And World Communion Sunday is a great Sunday to reflect on that, because we celebrate how God has the whole world in his hand, as the song goes, and brings us together as a family. However, we know that it's not always easy to come together as a family with people who are different, with different experiences and cultures or viewpoints, whatever it might be, but that we also know that that's God's intention. And this can happen, this difficulty, even in the most churchy of circumstances. Some of you may know that Wendy and some of our close friends in college were very involved in missions activities. And you actually hear some of the most dramatic stories about this and how culture clashes can happen, even when we're trying to be God's family together, on stories of missions trips. People go in with expectations of, what's my role going to be? What am I going to do? How are people going to treat me? How am I going to try to treat other people? A lot of times people have stories of, you know, mission trips are kind of roughing it. I'm going to go somewhere that's really different and new. Some people get excited about that. You know, maybe I have to sleep outside in a tent while we're building a new shelter for some place or something like that. I'll get to try all sorts of different types of food, maybe learn a little bit of a different language. But sometimes there are experiences too that we have heard of where people go into those interactions kind of saying, I want to come in and I'm helping, and so I can probably just do what I'd like and people will kind of make things work for me. So if they have food that I don't really like, I'll just ask, you know, people in a whole different country, where's your pizza and cheeseburgers or dino nuggets or whatever else, right? And they're serving me things that are from their culture and that I'm not used to and I'm not sure if I want to try. And it can keep going in all sorts of ways like that. That unfortunately, you know, we want to go and help, which is fine. We would hope that people would be welcoming for each other in any setting. That's true too. But those clashes can come up as well, where we can go into something, hopefully having a godly posture of wanting to connect, to support each other, to make accommodations. But sometimes we can also take on the posture of, well, I'm doing a good thing, I'm being a good person, and so everyone should make everything else work for me the way that I like, even if that really puts them out or makes it so that I'm not really fitting in and I'm putting impositions on other people. And our passages today give us some more models of how we can try to live as God's people when we're having all these types of relationships of different types of people. And that can include even all across the world, different cultures, different people groups. And that happens continually today, whether it's just interactions that we have with people that are a little bit different from us or that even come from different countries, or if we have the opportunity to travel around and experience that amazing big world that God gives us that we celebrate today. Now, we have to admit or acknowledge as we're going into our story of Esther now that Esther's story is one where she can really relate the same way that we can to what it's like to interact with people from all over the world. She was a citizen of the Persian Empire, and that was an empire that had spread from basically almost to India to throughout what's now Turkey and close to Greece, and so had lots of different people, lots of different people groups that had now all been under one country, and their strategy had often been to move people around, to encourage more of a sense of Persian identity than your individual culture identity, and so you got a chance to interact with a lot of different people. And so this is another part of the story of Esther as we're going through that we could see maybe connections, even though it's hundreds or thousands of years before now. And we can see in the example of Haman today that Haman was not necessarily excited about that in the way that we might lift up the most. Like, you get to meet all these different types of people, and your country is going to have all of these different types of things that you can experience, or people coming in with different skill sets that help build it up. Haman was most focused on, these are people that we conquered, and we get to tell them what to do, and they should accommodate us in every possible way. I may not even see them as fully human the way that me as a Persian is, and I'm going to be inclined to be suspicious and wanting to come after them. What I think is interesting in the story of Haman here with Mordecai is that he hadn't noticed Mordecai before. He was excited about all of these people from all of these different countries bowing down to him because the king had lifted him up. But he wasn't the one who noticed first that Mordecai was not bowing down. So Mordecai was not important enough, even in his offense, to come to Haman's attention. So Haman already had this kind of dehumanizing view of things, and then it just compounded when he found out, so this person that I don't even pay attention to or want to have impact my life is not doing the thing that makes me feel really awesome and important. Well, now I'm going to care, not for any other reason. That tells you a lot about the way Haman viewed the world and other people. Similarly, we can see, though, that because other people in the court thought that it would be helpful for them to report Mordecai to Haman for not bowing down, that this culture and this way of not figuring out ways of appreciating each other, healthily coming together and finding a new way of being with all of these different people, inclines people to say, I can get advantage by trying to push someone else down, make somebody else get paid attention to in a bad way. And if that can take all of the attention from me, if I can make somebody else look worse or different, that'll make me feel a little bit better. And so things can just kind of take off and snowball that way. And so we see the epitome of this and how other people are responding to it when Xerxes and Haman sit down at the end of our verses today in verse 15. And we can see this as being a classic example of what Jesus contrasts in the John verse of hired hands. So Xerxes and Haman have responsibility over all these people throughout the empire, and yet they are able to just casually say, let's send out an edict to wipe out a bunch of them because somebody who we didn't even pay attention to before didn't bow down to one of us. And it says that the rest of the city, the rest of the empire, sees this as really bizarre. Like, we're sending out edicts to just kill a bunch of people? It says that they were baffled and flabbergasted, depending on the translation, that they were bewildered. But they're just completely casual. Like, yeah, I'll just do this over dinner, you know? Like, send out the edict to ruin a bunch of people's lives. Let's go have a pumpkin burger. And so you can see that we know that there are things still in our world where people are going to operate as if you are there for me, to make things work for me, to make me feel good, to make me feel important. But I am not there to serve you, to have responsibility for you. And God could very easily take that same type of position. I created everything. Everyone should just do everything for me. I don't have to see you as having much dignity other than to make me as God feel more amazing and godlike all the time. And yet God takes a different posture, and we see that especially highlighted in these I am statements, and today's in particular, of I am the good shepherd. So this is Jesus reminding us the way that God operates in every circumstance, even when we have trouble seeing what God is doing, like in the story of Esther where God is not specifically mentioned. And the way that God is always faithful is God is the good shepherd. Not like a hired hand, not saying, I'll cut and run as soon as I can. You are only here for me. But even though I created everything, I'm here to serve you, to love you, to seek your thriving, to help bring a world of grace and peace and justice for everyone. God is willing to say that we are fully God's own and that he will accept us even when that means an extra level of connection, an extra level of solidarity, an extra level of sacrifice on God's part. Not sending out edicts to destroy, but taking on risk and threat even to die. And like in chapter 1 of Esther that we saw a couple weeks ago, we see that again, people in oppressive power have this natural insecurity. Remember, Xerxes wanted Vashti to come and parade around for him. And as soon as Vashti said, no, I don't want to walk around in front of all your drunk friends. I'm not going to do that. All of Xerxes and his buddies were like, well, if Vashti can say no to this thing, then all sorts of people who were trying to make do unreasonable things will say no to us. And the world won't work exactly for us anymore. There's this insecurity and fragility to what they're doing. They're basically saying one single Jew won't bow down to me because he wants to show honor to a different type of authority than my pettiness, my capriciousness. He wants to show honor to a God who loves and serves instead of lords over. Well, because of that one Jew doing something, what if it spreads? So I'm going to kill everybody. Everyone who is like him must also be oppressed, because otherwise people might realize that they can do something different and ultimately better than what I want for myself. They might actually believe in this different type of world and help it come about. That fragility, that weakness, that wondering if one tiny crack shows up in how I'm trying to exert power is the opposite of how Jesus talks about having authority in our John passage today. Jesus' authority is evidenced by laying down his own interest, by laying down his own life, not on imposing power on other people, not by being able to take other people's lives and control them in oppressive ways. In order to be a leader who has full authority and serves and loves, you have to be fully secure in who you are. You have to be fully secure in what you're about and what your mission and values are. And you have to be fully secure and fully invested in the love that you have for those that you have any kind of authority over. And that is exactly who Jesus is. We would never see Jesus saying, somebody has some questions for me? Well, let's get rid of them and anybody else that has a question like that as well. Jesus would walk with us through our struggle, through our doubt, help us find that point of thriving salvation life together. And we know that any of us can have different positions of authority or influence over people in our lives as well. And that's an opportunity that God says, I will share my love with you in a way that you can be empowered to also find. If you have authority and influence, can we see our own opportunity for service, for sharing, for creating opportunity for others, rather than feeling like we have to put other people down all the time when we're in those positions? Empires like the one that Xerxes led claim greatness because of all the territories that they collected, all the people that they conquered, all of the people that they can also then minimize and say, we conquered you, so you're not as good as us, and that's how we know that we are better. It takes away value from things in order to make this empire. It's power that minimizes, power that's destructive. But on the other hand, God shows us with creation itself, but also with that faithful promise of being like a good shepherd, that God can be expanding, enlivening, creative in God's power. There's a very big contrast between I can incorporate the beauty of many, many flocks. Like the passage says, there are flocks that are not in this pen that are also my own, and I'm going to bring them together as one family. That's a very different viewpoint than I'm going to obliterate all of the other people that are out there that have different customs or pens or experiences than yours. Jesus, in fact, starts the emphasis of the metaphor of being a good shepherd by acknowledging that there are sheep outside of our pen. We might say, the point of Jesus is to get everybody in a pen that looks exactly like ours, sings hymns exactly like ours, does different practices exactly like ours, has all of the same thoughts and opinions and feelings that we have. But that is not the way that Jesus talks about being a good shepherd. Jesus acknowledges there are other pens. I love and care for all of them and will find a way to bring them together without taking away the experiences that they had in each of those pens. Jesus acknowledges difference as part of the foundation of his flock and still finds ways to bind us all together as one people. It's not that there's one flock that we all have to lose who we are in order to come together, but somehow Jesus is able to weave us together in each of our own threads into a beautiful tapestry. And so when we have these promises that, like Jesus being the good shepherd, we know that these I am statements are a way that Jesus is saying God is like this in all circumstances all the time, even if it's hard to discern. So when we find ourselves in a world like Esther was, and we aren't sure God's not being mentioned, right? That's the special feature of Esther. We know that God will act like a shepherd. We can look for God acting like a shepherd to help us make sense and find our path in a world where we're not sure exactly what God is doing all the time. So we can remember that when we are in a world that has all kinds of differences, but where that world might actually encourage division and toxicity to rise up easily, in a world where it can be very difficult to interact comfortably with people who have different experiences or perspectives than our own, and in a world where we're encouraged in response to that to be accusatory of other people or to be defensive about if people are asking us to do something that's a little bit different, where even we can be encouraged to actively seek the harm and division between people who are of different pens, rather than having God find a way to bring us to common cause. We know that that happens around us all the time. In that type of world, we can know that we will find God as a shepherd. The shepherd bringing together people of different pens. So wherever people are valued, wherever people are cared for where they would otherwise be ignored, wherever people are acknowledged and brought in where they would otherwise be dismissed, or even when people would otherwise be actively mistreated, but then they are given opportunity and dignity. That is where God is moving. That is where God is being the shepherd. That's where we can walk alongside God and know that that is coming together. God will be working against all of those negative forces and inviting us to be a part of bringing the new salvation life for ourselves and for others that can make a difference in transforming all of that oppression. I mentioned earlier that we have, Wendy and I and some friends of ours, different stories of how people had trouble finding ways to be together with flocks of other pens on missions trips. We also, though, have stories of ways people found beautiful ways to come together, even under what might have been challenging circumstances. There's a friend of mine who had committed to be a vegetarian as part of her ethical expression of taking care of God's creation. It was really important to her, but missions was also important to her as well. And she went on a trip to Africa and was working with people who, as a way of showing honor and welcome and invitation to the people who came as a trip, took a prized cow of the village, and we're going to kill it and cook it up together for a special meal of everyone coming together. And there were a lot of people who, because also part of the ceremony apparently was killing it in front of everyone in sort of a ceremonial way. And so there were people there who were like, oh, that's gross, or I don't want to eat meat, and didn't realize like the level of dismissal of the welcome and kindness that these people were trying to show to their honored guests. But my friend said, I realized in that moment that while I did take my ethics really seriously, and that was important to me, that my most important ethic in all of this was appreciating and connecting with God's creation. And if I can't do that with these people who are honoring me with the thing that means the most to them, then my ethic has been violated more than if I were to eat a piece of meat. And so she was able to do that. She went back with that same group to that same area a few times, and they began learning about that there were people from the U.S. who had different dietary restrictions for different reasons. And they, the village that they were going to, began creating these new ceremonies with a range of different things that they would bring out, crops that they had grown and things, and were actually willing to continue to accommodate, because for them, again, they cared about honoring God's creation and the flocks from different pens more than they cared about the way that we have always shown honor before is the way we have to show honor to each new person. And so we see this amazing picture, like we can with World Communion Sunday, where God's love is helping people come together no matter the pen that they start with, and we can continue to be the type of people that show that same love, consideration, and ability to mix together. In God's kingdom, we can be excited about how we build up in serving each other, even in unexpected ways, rather than worrying about all the time being in competition for who gets to do less so that they can get their way more. And we have fighting over who will get things the most their way. We have an opportunity not only with World Communion Sunday to think about that, how we connect with people all over the world, but this will also impact our relationships and our interactions with people right next door, down the street, maybe even in our own families, that see the world a little bit differently. And so we can remember that God, as a shepherd, shows us how we can be together with sheep of all sorts of pens and ask God's love to help us make those connections. We'll go into the communion table together, where we see a brokenness and divisions actually unite a people at one table and as one family, and that will help us remember that as well.